Blog Talk Radio.
Aloha, pork puppets, and welcome to PWT Talks NXT. Why pork puppets? I don't know, but I call people that in my everyday life, so you have to hear it too, because I should work more of those everyday life things into the podcast, because why not? We're going to talk about NXT for August 3rd, 2021. We are 2.5 weeks away from TakeOver 36, which will be on SummerSlam Sunday, since SummerSlam is weirdly on a Saturday. And we took a couple more steps toward that show. I dare say it's looking like a pretty good show. Lots of singles matches on a show with two tag team championships. So I guess we'll have to see what happens there. I'm Kelly Wells. I'm your host. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or SpookyMilk.games. Let's talk main event. Love him or leave him, folks. I think the announcers probably sold the stakes of this match more than they sell the average championship match, which is fine. Like, I like how much they sold this. I mean, you could ask them to up the ante maybe for championships, but there are so many championships. Maybe that doesn't seem like such a big deal anymore. But yes, this one they sold with deadly seriousness, which is humorous, saying it's essentially a comedy storyline in the main event slot. But Dexter Lumis facing Johnny Gargano. If Dexter wins, he gets to hang out with Indy Hartwell and True Love is the winner. And if Johnny Gargano wins, then she can't hang with him anymore. So kind of a weird storyline to put Indy in that position, but I think they got away with it with the way this ended. This goes 12:51. Of course, everybody in the way gets involved, except for Austin Theory. We don't know what he's selling right now, as he left and walked out a few weeks ago. But Gargano goes over with one final beat. He does it on the outside after he checks on Indy Hartwell, who he inadvertently knocked to the floor on a kick out by Johnny Gargano. And then Gargano wins with one final beat on the outside, then the inside. But it doesn't matter, because Indy runs back to the ring and gives Dexter Lumis a very stagey kiss, but a kiss nonetheless. A Fez press and then the figure four lip lock by Indy Hartwell. Gargano wins, but Lumis, the real winner today, because love has triumphed over evil. Tom Staub, who are you, and what did you think of the main event?
Pork puppets. Well, that's kind of jank-a-wank. I am at Tom Staub, and I did admittedly have Simone and Suni on one screen with NXT on another, but I think I caught enough of this. It's no secret that I feel Dexter Lumis is a terrible character, and that The Way is an atrociously stupid faction. So then you put them together in a love her or leave her stipulation match. That sounds worse than both combined, but I'll be damned. This was incredibly well-crafted. It hooked me early. And it had both fun and dramatic beats throughout that not only kept me guessing on a surface level, but also had me caring about the outcome on a deeper level in the end. And they didn't have to, I don't think, explicitly put Index on the line to achieve all of this. But then acknowledging how dumb stipulating such a thing is afterward by having Indy run back to Lumis, it heightened the moment that much more. Like, I was thinking when Indy dragged Lumis out from under the ring, rather than just the reveal that they were holding hands, maybe he should have had, like, a lipstick mark on his cheek or something. But I appreciate that they didn't give that away there, because making this a forbidden moment made the payoff that much more satisfying. And this was also a situation where my children caught the beginning of the show where they set up the match. And, you know, they were leaning into how silly it all was, the show that is. But my kids then went about their business, but said, hey, let us know when that main event comes on, because we want to see it. And they came out and they were really into it, and they were into the near falls. And I feel that this is one of those finishes that might actually have them interested next time these characters are on screen. So it's one of those situations where even while I enjoyed it, I still think this is all very, very silly. I don't know. I mean, you can make Randy Savage and Elizabeth comparisons, but like their love was never on the line just because someone one of them was aligned with could possibly win a match. It was all of it surrounded the matches. This put it actually into the match. So that's all very silly, but I look in my own household and it seems to have hooked two people on a fan level. So I think that next time they happen to catch, if you know, knowing them, it won't be appointment television or anything, but if they happen to catch Indy or Dexter on screen, they'll want to check it out.
Yeah, I dug this too. And again, way more than the sum of its parts, because the sum of its parts seems like it would make the universe implode, but it worked. And putting this on the line, it's funny that on a show that has created in a business that has created way too many championships. Now it's the non-championship matches with stakes that seem bigger because they truly are one of a kind. Nate Lindberg, who are you?
You just told everybody who I was. I am Nate Lindberg, who I was. I still am Nate Lindberg, and you can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I do the hits and misses, which I'll have posted up first thing in the morning for you guys. I got to admit, NXT, you did something I didn't think you could do, and you got me to care about Dexter Lumis. I don't think I could put it any better than you guys just said it, but I was looking forward to this match anyway. You know, I've started to get behind this story over the past handful of weeks. At first it was an eye roll for me. I'm like, what the hell are they doing? But it hooked me over the past few weeks, and I haven't been quite as low, quite as down on the way as Tom has. And I think you have, Kelly, you know, over the past handful of weeks, I've admittedly, they've gone way, way down. You know, the quality and everything, kind of the act has gone way down since their inception, but, I was still there. I was still in it, and you know, still looking forward to this match. But I wasn't quite sure what to expect from it. But it was really well crafted. There was it was excellent storytelling, and I really wasn't expecting the finish either. I was really honestly, I was expecting Lumis to get a clean win. I figured it was just going to be love would prevail, and all of that. I don't know why I was kind of thinking that, but that's kind of just the way I thought it was going to go. So. I was a little thrown when he lost. And then, of course, you know, at the very end, she comes running down. I like the way Kelly put that, the Thez Press lip lock. I thought that, you know, it was great, you know, great way to end that. And it did. It showed that the stipulation was stupid in the first place, because it's like there. Why would she listen to Johnny Gargano in the first place? Yeah, sure. He's her, I guess, leader or whatever in this faction, but it's not like she's tied to this faction by, you know, it's wrestling, I guess, whatever. It's just a really weird stipulation, weird story, but they made it work. I'm actually curious to see what happens here, how they mold this, you know, going forward. Are they just going to basically like kick Indy Hartwell out of the house for being the rebellious teenager, or are they going to try to embrace her, her love interest and be those parents or, you know, that secretly hate the boyfriend, but they allow him to come by anyway. Which I don't know. I think either one could make for interesting TV. Not the best TV, but it might be entertaining. Overall, I enjoyed this. I dug it. I think it turned out better than anybody expected it could have.
Dexter Lumis sitting at dinner with the Garganos could be the best or worst thing we've ever seen.
That's what I'm saying.
I don't know how they deal with it, but I think his first line has to be juicy fruit. Okay, folks, if you want to email us, you sure can. You can do that at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. We got three emails tonight, but I am not going to read any of them yet because they don't pertain to the main event. We will do that a little later, but wanted to get that out of the way. If you want to call us, that is 515-605-9345. And let me go to our friend Darrell and see just what he thought. I'm trying to unmute him, but my computer's not having it. There, I think it let me that time. Darrell, how are you?
How y'all guys doing tonight?
Doing pretty good. Happy to be here. And, yeah, I dug the show tonight. How about you?
I really liked the show tonight. They had a few things that were very interesting. And, you know, they're building feuds up, getting ready for a takeover. So, hey, tonight was a good show for it to be already taped. So, hey, I can't complain. My first question for you guys tonight would be, how did you guys like the sit-down special that they had of Dakota Kai and her explaining everything and how she molded and told the story on why she did whatever she did to Raquel and how everything built up from back telling the story how she found Raquel and how it was just supposed to be her backing her up and helping her out and stuff like that and pulling her from nothing to where they at now. What do you guys think about that whole story? Because I thought it was amazing. I thought this was the best Dakota Kai look in a while. And how she sounded, how she made you believe, and just the emotion of everything. It was just amazing. What did you guys think?
Oh, do I want to talk about Dakota Kai? I think I do. I think I do, folks. Yes, this was I had it all planned out to say, let's talk about the main event first and then go into this Dakota Kai segment. That is what I was going to do. Forgot because I got onto the show, started calling people pork puppets, and all of a sudden I can't remember what's going on. In my notes for this segment.
And yet you still remember quotes from One Flew Over a Cuckoo's Nest.
I know. I saw that for the first time in ninth grade. I'm not entirely sure I've seen it since, but that, remember, Juicy Fruit. I didn't know if we'd go back to it. I was like, Tom will get it for sure. Will he say it? I don't know.
Believe it or not, I even got that one.
Oh, I've been sitting here trying to figure out a more organic way to work it in, and I just couldn't come up with it.
Right. There will probably be something about kicking ass and chewing bubble gum later where we could have worked that out.
Oh, there we go.
Maybe there is your way into wrestling. Yeah, on my notes, all I wrote down for this segment is Dakota Kai is awesome. That was my note to myself about what to talk about. What's funny about this storyline for Dakota is much like her original heel turn on Tegan Nox and getting into War Games, stealing that spot from who did she injure? Ember, maybe? Whoever she injured to get into Mia Yim. She injured to get into the match, and then she got into the match, took out Tegan, and that was that. Both of them were told in such a way that it was clear if you were really paying attention what was going to happen, like obvious. Tom and I have been talking for weeks. I think we first both brought up weeks ago that this was going to happen with Dakota being the next one. And yet it was all so expertly done, and they showed the proper amount of restraint that it still sold itself perfectly. The only thing I could possibly gripe about is that if you really, really think about why Dakota's angry, then you should kind of be on her side, because Raquel, who was right there, and all of the opponents of Raquel basically just stepped all over her and overlooked her, walked past her, quite literally in some segments and in some cases. Maybe you should be on the side of Dakota Kai. Now, I am, of course, but I could see her being the babyface in this situation. That's the only thing I could say. But, of course, she did go about it the wrong way, the bad way, and that's what makes her a heel. I think it would be criminal if she did not win the championship here. I think it's crazy she hasn't had it already, but I think she's going to. And whether that means Raquel's going up or what, I think that if you don't do it here, then when? Because she's gotten her chances against a multitude of champions and, of course, continues to have great matches, continues to be part of some pretty good stories. But this one has been it's beautiful because it leaves you wanting more from the duo, because the duo really was an organic, a strong duo. But I love the way this rolled out. I love that the team didn't overstay its welcome before this happened. And I cannot wait to see this match and to see Dakota win that championship. Tom.
It's funny that you bring up the turn on Tegan, because this was another one where a family member was around. My partner was watching this with me, and she said, man, this girl just turns on people all the time, doesn't she? And it's apt to bring up that comparison as well, because you're right. It is somewhat similar, especially in the sense that you detail, where this video package, I also did not write many, honestly, I did not write any notes on this particular package, because it was all very straightforward for those of us that have been watching the show and paying close attention to Dakota's character and Dakota's storyline. It was all there. But if you were watching more peripherally, if you were just tuning in here and there, this package laid out what has been going on with her. So she said everything we knew was already happening, but it gets everyone else up to speed. And as always, her delivery was excellent. I said this on Wrestling Night in America. The timing of this is what makes it a question mark for me. The result of the match at TakeOver, that is, because it honestly doesn't feel like we're at a point where Raquel is about to topple off of her mountain, but it also doesn't feel like there is anyone else that she can wrestle without it feeling stale. And that includes some of the newcomers, people like Zoe Stark, who's involved in something different right now, people like Frankie Monet, who is slumming it right now. And nobody else has been built up to championship challenger status. So it kind of feels like you have to move the belt to then have the maximum interest in the championship scene of the women's division moving forward. But you know, we also say that as Dakota Kai fans. So yeah, it's going to be a takeover full of matches I don't know how to predict, I think.
And it's not only the only way to make a women's championship match that's novel, it's perhaps the only one way to make one seem big. Because Raquel's a good-ish wrestler. Like, she's kind of getting there. But she's not so great that there's, like, a destination match. It's something really big that you have to see. So in the absence of that, you get even better. This blood feud, these sisters who turn on each other. And that's probably the biggest match available to Raquel. Nate?
Absolutely. So rather than rehashing everything you guys just said, I'm basically just going to say ditto and kind of add this. And I don't know if I've brought this up on the show. I probably have. I know I've written about it in the hits and misses at least. But Raquel Gonzalez, to me, has not actually felt like – she's not felt like the centerpiece of that duo for a while. And I know she has been the centerpiece of that duo. And she's been, you know, obviously she's a champion, whatever, but like the duo started as her being that heater for Dakota Kai. And I would say, God, even after she won the championship, that perception for me was still there. And probably even up to the last few weeks, she finally started in my head anyway, she finally started to be the Shawn Michaels to the Diesel, you know? And it started to work. But up until then, and I'd say that was maybe 3 or 4 weeks before this heel turn. But before then, I still felt like Dakota Kai was the bigger star. And I do. I agree. I think this is Dakota Kai's time to shine. I don't feel like Raquel Gonzalez is – I don't want to say she's not a good champion, because she's been a decent champion. She's a dominant champion. But I still don't buy her as champion. And I hate to say that, because I feel like I probably should, but there's just something about her and her presentation that I just, I haven't been able to get behind her as champion. One thing that I do like about this is this finally should clearly define Gonzalez as a face. We've talked about it a few times. I know this was brought up last week that she's constantly flip-flopping. She's either in the ring scowling and being angry and mean, or, you know, a couple weeks go by and now she's in the ring smiling and being all happy and waving to the fans and kissing babies and stuff. So she's gone back and forth there, which I think was probably foreshadowing for this or whatever. But regardless, it is finally going to hopefully clearly define that, and she's not going to kind of be toiling around. I think that's one of the things that really started to put me off from the character is I wanted to get behind her in the same way I got behind Rhea Ripley. And Rhea Ripley, at least in NXT, I don't want to talk about her on the main roster, but at least in NXT, she remained consistent and she was a baby face, but had those anti-hero vibes. And that was kind of the way that I felt like Raquel should have been presented. Maybe not in an exactly similar way, but something along those lines. And, you know, the presentation is a little bit different. It still worked, just not my favorite. But I'm hoping that this now, with Dakota Kai being the de facto heel, defines her as the face, and that's going to be good for the character, whether she retains or not. My money is on Dakota Kai. I feel like everything was kind of building to this. I don't know who else she could face at this point. Nothing feels fresh, with the exception of that one match. Even, you know, somebody like Zoe Stark or something like that, you know, obviously that's not where the story is, but nobody else, I can't think of anybody else on the roster or that might be in the back burner coming up that really makes me go, oh yeah, that's it. That's the match. So yeah, I'm on board. Fingers crossed, Dakota Kai.
You know, if they really want to troll me, they can do it with Ember Moon again, where Dakota wins and then, or she wins the championship, then Moon sullies the moment, like with the tag team champions, and said, oh, you're the champion, you're going to need a challenger. I haven't earned it, and you just beat me, but here I am. I'm still mad about that. Why am I still mad about that?
Well, hey, we did keep saying we wanted to see Moon with the second title, right?
Right. Not quite yet. It's okay if it's her. It's okay if it's her. That would be a great person to beat Dakota Kai. Not soon. All right. Durrell, what else did you say tonight?
Okay. I'm going to go from that sit down to something that they did a prime target on. And I think a lot of people will like once they get to see the match and stuff like that. And that match is Dragunov versus Walter. Because I think that'll be Walter's swan song for the UK and introduction and finally completion to NXT proper. That match right there, I think that will be the most serious match that will be on the card. It will be probably the best wrestled match and hard-hitting match. And I like everything that they set up on that prime target for that match. And I can't wait to see part two of that match, because I'm pretty sure probably at TakeOver we might be getting a part three in another match. So I want to see how those two matches end up and hold up. So what do you guys think about that as a whole?
Prime Target used to be a thing that blurred the lines and talked a lot about wrestlers into their real lives. They have gotten totally away from that. Some of them have been mixed, and this one here was completely in kayfabe. And so getting that out of the way, because, you know, you just kind of have to, because Prime Target means whatever they want it to mean from one week to the next. Otherwise, I would say this was very exciting, and I can't wait for this. Everything about this match is going to be awesome. Now, I'm not the guy, because I'm not young enough to say something slaps, but I can say that this will slap, because they will do a lot of that until they break lots and lots of blood vessels.
You can say it, but can you not say it?
I know. Well, I'm trying to do both here, so and I think I'm getting away with it. But Walter versus Ilya, for anyone who didn't see the first, you probably have Peacock. Go back and watch the first one. It's probably 30-ish minutes or more. you got to do it. It's brutally mean. It's wonderful. And Ilya's like the smaller underdog, but he's also relentless. He's a bulldog. And he's insane, and I love him. And he's like a top five or so wrestler for me, probably. I adore him. And but I could say that a lot about a lot of guys, including his opponent. So perhaps the next best thing is the knowledge of the impending Walter versus Samoa Joe feud. Man, oh man, Nate.
I'm going to be completely honest with you. That's the first time I've heard about that knowledge. So if that was a leak or something like that, I didn't know.
It's just something that has to be.
Okay. All right. That sounds good. Cause quite frankly, the second you just said that, I literally got goosebumps. That would be phenomenal. It has to happen. Absolutely has to happen. As far as this video goes, the Prime Target video, I didn't really take any notes on it either. I thought it was, you know, relatively straightforward. So pretty much all the video packages. Tom said the same thing tonight. Didn't really take many notes on the videos, but I think it was, you know, really really well put together. And obviously, it wasn't a Prime Target video in the sense that I think we would hope that they would be doing Prime Target videos. I kind of like the grounded in real life, but I only want them to do them in certain instances, right? Like I don't want them to always kind of, you know, draw the curtain back and go outside kayfabe. You know, I'd like them that to be kind of a special thing, you know, introducing somebody new or taking somebody that's been around for a while and kind of, you know, giving us a little bit more about them. But I still thought it was, you know, it was well done. I just wish they didn't call it a Prime Target. So that is what it is there. But just to reiterate everything Kelly just said, yeah, go watch that match between Dragunov and Walter, the first one. It's one of the few I have gone out of my way to watch in NXT UK. You know, I haven't really been following NXT UK, you know, really, well, again, since the pandemic, but even before that, just loosely, it's one of the few matches I've certainly got on my way to watch. And I think it's probably, at least if I'm thinking of all the matches on the card announced, at least for 36 so far, I think this probably is the one I'm looking forward to the most. You know, I don't necessarily know the story or anything. Again, I haven't really been following the product, but, knowing these two, knowing what they did to, you know, in their first match. This is going to be brutal. It's going to be a brutal match. Like Darrell said, it's probably going to be the most serious match on the card. It's going to be wrestling. There's going to be wrestling the way it should be. It's going to be awesome. I can't wait.
Yeah. The first one had a built-in story of frustration for Ilya Dragunov because he won the battle royal. He won a 20-man battle royal to become number one contender on the last episode before the pandemic shut down production. Like literally the last thing, they found the number one contender and then it shut down. So he came back and they used that as part of the story. Tom?
Yeah, this was a good summary for fans unfamiliar with these guys, since this is going to be a lot of people watching TakeOver who don't watch NXT UK. But like Nate said, I feel the thing it was missing was a catch-up on the current story. That's what was missing here, and there's time. Maybe they will catch us up on that current story, so maybe that was, I don't know, maybe that's not really a valid complaint here. But you mentioned a possible Samoa Joe feud, and yeah, that does sound good, I guess, as I'll surely say again, and when we get to talking about it, I'm really not I'm not looking at Joe Cross as a sure thing for Joe, but either way, I think that Ilya Dragunov needs to win this match at TakeOver. Walter needs to go away for a little while and then show back up and challenge whomever the NXT champion is at the time.
Yep, I can deal with that. And it seemed like he was setting up some feuds for himself for whenever he finally does show up on NXT US. But I don't know, some of the people he could have feuded with aren't in the company anymore. But oh well. Darrell, what else do you have for us?
Okay. Also, tonight, we had first match on the card, you had Hit Row, who seemed over with the crowd there in NXT, because all you heard throughout the match was the Hit Row and Legado Phantasma, the two factions. I guess we'll have some type of faction war. I think everybody been saying after a while, after seeing both groups and them interacting with each other and all of that, I'm liking the way that they slow building and they slow planning. I can have the faction war first and then the title match later. You don't have to pull it off then. Again, another couple of matches being told and stories being told. And looking like we're going back to having some longer stories, even with all the previous things that you guys have just mentioned of the two questions that I have. A lot of these are long, drawn out stories that we're getting and they're telling, especially even with that Walter thing, they can go back and talk about how Ilya struggled with that violence and how the violence made him mad and getting into it after that match, and it took months of getting it away. So that is something that they can introduce to even build up that match even more, depending on where they want to put that in the card. But other than that, but yeah, how did you guys like that first match that happened on the card and the build up and the continued build up? I know it, he stole his grill and stuff like that, and I know some people would think that's silly, but you know, that's a if you ever heard a Swerve interview and how he feels about the character that he's doing now, that's more of a who he is now and how that represents a culture and stuff like that. So you have to really dive deep, and they will need to start telling more into that so you can understand the significance of everything that they're trying to tell in this storyline. But what do you guys think?
Opening match, Hit Rose, Top Dollar, and Ashante the Adonis defeat Legado del Fantasma's Joaquin Wild and Raul Mendoza in 10:51 by disqualification. You know, 10:51 counting the commercial, but this was taped, so 10:51 may not be the exact amount, because this isn't one of the matches that went to split screen. This was just a full-on commercial, so I like the DQ finish here because there's more to do between these factions, and this can this one has legs, most of them belonging to Brianna Brandy. But Hit Row defeats Legado. Two chair shots in this match, one to finish the match, that by Escobar as he throws the chair shot on Top Dollar. keep him from winning the match clean. And then Brianna Brandy hits, it was either Joaquin or Raul, and Hit Row does kind of clear the ring. And I liked the moment of stealing the grill as well, because it is, that is genuine culture. And I like that Legado is doing that, because the whole thing that Legado has been doing is claiming Lucha Libre heritage while at the same time kind of poo-pooing it and backhanding it and not using the masks and, cheating all the time and doing things unbecoming of a lucha hero, seemingly unaware that they are doing so. I was also surprised and pleased that the crowd seemed to play along with this, because Legado was definitely clearly being booked to be the heels in this feud, but Legato's also been pretty popular in the CWC period. And I get it. They're all really, really good in the ring. It's a good act. They're exciting guys. But yeah, they played along with this and did treat Hit Row as the faces. Tom said a few weeks ago that, to see if this is working, we need to see when they start picking up Top Dollar's catchphrase, who better than Top Dollar, not nada. And he yelled that out before he was going to hit his finisher. And quite a few people did yell out not nada. So they're getting into it. It is working. Lots of brawling and a mess and nothing solved. afterwards. So I don't know what's next for this. Certainly we get our singles match at the top, Swerve and Escobar, which I feel like we've seen a couple times. It doesn't matter to me at all. I could watch them go all day, every day, as long as there's something new to latch onto. And so far, they continue to do that. So Faction Warfare, Gang Wars 21, it's working on me, folks. Tom?
Yeah, and Swerve is fresh enough, or freshened up now, since his last never-ending feud with Escobar. So that's fine. And yes, Swerve Escobar feels like it's absolutely takeover bound. They could main event a week of TV with it, but it really doesn't feel like strong Kushida or whatever's going to be going on in either tag division or any personal feud is, unless there's something obvious I'm forgetting. It doesn't. Well, yeah, you've got Cole. Now I'm going to think out loud. Cole O'Reilly, Ilya Walter, the top title. Yeah, no, there's. Yeah, it feels like this is going to be the fifth match on TakeOver. So they're giving themselves the time to build it properly. So that's an excellent thing that we don't see enough of. But as for this match itself, I was just happy that we got Wade Barrett saying, "Who hotter than Top Dollar? Not Nada, I know that much." So that's my takeaway from this was Wade Barrett, you know, showing off that he knows Top Dollar's catchphrase.
Wade Barrett, always good every week, but it seemed like a good week even for him. Just really latching on, a little more heelish this week and in some good ways. In fact, we didn't mention it, but Vic suckering him into agreeing with the lyrics to "The Power of Love" was probably Vic's finest hour. Nate on the opener.
Yeah, I don't really have a whole heck of a lot to add that you guys didn't already kind of say or go over. So I guess, yeah, I just throw in that, you know, Hit Row right now, they're on fire. Legato, they were like, they were the faction that they were the cool faction. I mean, everybody loved how they were presented. They had that, you know, and they still do. They have like that drug lord presence about them. But man, putting them next to Hit Row, like, it almost feels like they're like the Rat Pack or something, you know, coming up against like the new breed. It's interesting, and it's a really cool dynamic because there's still that cool factor of Legato, but it's a completely different cool factor from Hit Row. And I'm really identifying more with that. I think the fan base might be as well. Obviously that's the way that they're presenting it, but I think they really got something with this faction. Other than that, I don't really have much to add that you guys didn't go over already.
Do you want to try a Wade Barrett impression?
I've got some bad news. No.
I'm guessing that one was better than mine. I'm still getting used to my new headphones and I couldn't hear myself. I'm guessing it was terrible.
All I wanted to know is he going to come up with a different line or is he going to fall back on bad news? Because that's the one we've all heard 1,000 times. And then I was like, what would I have said? I would have stammered a bit and then said, you know what? I got to throw in the towel. I'm going to have to do the bad news line.
I mean, if I knew it was coming, I might have had something, but, you know.
I think my favorite Wade Barrett moment on commentary so far has been, it was just last week, and he didn't even, the part that I loved, he didn't even say anything. It was Vic Joseph giving this great introduction to Duke Hudson coming on guest commentary. And then when Vic, after setting all of this up, pitches to Duke to introduce him, Duke just looks right to Wade like, "Oh, how's it going, Wade?" You know, didn't even acknowledge Vic, who had just given him this great introduction.
Wonderful. Duke gets it, folks. He really gets it. Okay. Darrell, if you got one more, go ahead.
Okay. And the last one would be about, we had the match, and you had Pete Dunne them out there. And you had Ridge Holland with return in his first match back, and they're building up another faction, another group. And it looked like they rebounded because, you know, this group was supposed to be centered around Pat McAfee, but we know where he's at right now and how this is going with him on SmackDown. But I like the build up to this group and how they've been building it up. And at first, they had Pete Dunne only saying a couple of words. And then each week here, he starts saying more words to it. But he still started off with, if you think you're better than me, paraphrasing it, but you think you're better than me, prove me wrong. And now he's out and he cut his promo today with everything and talking about these guys, and they setting up maybe Ciampa and Thatcher trying to go up against the three and stuff like that. And I like how serious Ridge look against Jiro, who was just in the breakout tournament and stuff like that. And I like that they're putting a real menacing feel around this group. A group that looked like could be, since they was teasing Pete Dunne versus Samoa Joe, and this group could be, what, the first challenger of Joe. So I'm liking the feel, and I'm liking the build of this group again. I said it with my other questions. We having a couple of build-up of people and storylines that's more than just 1 or 2 week, and they've been telling stories. I know that was a problem that we had with, since they've been on USA, that these, how they've been going through stories. And now you can see, if even you can go back during all the shows and starting to see some of these small little build-ups of these shows. I like that. And I'm liking what I'm seeing with Pete Dunne and the different side of him, especially different than how he was with British Strong Style, and it's something totally different. And he's feeding in, and he's feeling more like a leader. And everything, and Adam Reeves hollering back even makes them seem a little bit different, even though we know they lost one of the others, and they can always bring him back as well whenever he gets healthy. So what do you guys think about all of that and how they've been building this up and the potential as this could be the first feud for Samoa Joe if Samoa Joe pulls off that victory at TakeOver?
Thanks as always, Darrell. We got Ridge Holland over Eichemann Jiro in 3:12. Jiro never wins on NXT. It doesn't matter. The crowd absolutely loves him. And I wrote in my recap, man, they would just love it if their baby faces and heels could get the proper reaction like this match every single time. I like any good babyface underdog versus dominating heel match, and have that heel win 70-80% of them. So it makes a difference when you get that underdog win, but Ridge goes over in 3:12, and then Dunn, of course, gets his mic time, cuts a promo on Ciampa and Thatcher. Weird that Gargano and Ciampa both seem like they'll be away from TakeOver this time. I don't know how long it's been since they both missed TakeOver, but I'd have to say it's been a very, very long time. Probably more than half of the TakeOvers ago, I would think. But anyway, Ridge over Jiro. And I also love that we keep having to call this group, because we still don't have a name for this group. It's like they had a logo, and it seemed like they were going to find a name when they had Pat McAfee, but now they don't have him. They've been beset by injuries, first to Ridge, then to Danny. But indeed, this group is still called this group. So what are you going to do? As far as long-term storytelling, absolutely. They have been so much better at this. Again, this was one of NXT's calling cards. They didn't do too many takeovers, too many big shows, and as a result, they had time to tell the stories they needed to tell while also getting new talent ready on TV. And now we're starting to see new talent once again kind of get ready on TV. And especially now, because we got the breakout tournament going. And we're seeing dominating matches like this, but still getting a lot of time outside the ring to tell these stories, to get us to to TakeOver. So very happy with the pacing of the show. It's really, really made me look forward to this show again after a period of not dreading it, but just feeling like it was a trudge because I was going to feel like for 2 hours, just everything, just nonstop buckets of entertainment were drowning me. Like you can't even catch up. And at the end of the show, you don't even remember anything that happened because they just try to do so much. It's so much better a show when you give the workers a little bit of time to breathe. Nate.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I think it's which match are we talking about here? I was expecting to throw to Tom and I was playing with the dog.
It's essentially Ridge versus Ikem and
right.
Jiro.
Ridge.
But also the bigger question of taking time to tell stories and Pete Dunne.
Yes, as soon as you said Ridge, everything kind of came flooding back. First off, talking about the segment, I really like the drive and the tone of Pete Dunne's voice. I forget who said it, but somebody said it, that he came out, you know, and each week he's been kind of just throwing out a little bit more and a little bit more. And tonight he really had some vigor behind him. So I really wanted to kind of highlight that. He felt like the de facto leader of a faction right now. And I guess you can call it a faction because it's not just him and Oney Lorcan. Now they've got Ridge Holland. This group, I guess, will still, I guess that works. I am liking this. If I'm not mistaken, it looked like Ridge Holland was supposed to be joining this faction before he got hurt anyway. So it's kind of nice to see that they kind of just went full circle and brought him back in.
Pete Dunne was the audible. He was the one who had to take place.
That's what I thought. Yeah. So I like that. I like that they kind of, you know, brought him back in, and you know, this faction was still a thing for them to do that with. Because it definitely got nerfed where it was, Pat McAfee got taken off and now he's on SmackDown. Danny Burch got hurt. So it was, then you've got this kind of weird pairing of these two guys that really had no reason to be together other than this faction that nobody's really been talking about. So yeah, the addition of Ridge Holland, I think, is great. It really kind of brought that extra oomph to the to that stable, to that group. And I'm looking forward to seeing where they go with this and how they build on it. In terms of Ikem and Jiro, Kelly, you said it. Like, I think they wish that they could probably have this reaction for their matches more often. Ikem and Jiro, yeah, he's probably always going to lose, but man, I'm going to enjoy watching him do it. That guy, I don't think his English skills are quite there, but oh my God, he can still the charisma that comes off that guy. You can't help but not like him. He's going to be a great enhancement talent for the roster for sure. And if he does end up climbing up the card, I'll be pleasantly surprised.
I love that his jacket is being used for nuclear heat with the crowd.
Right?
It's so stupid. I love it so much. Tom?
That was another good Wade Barrett moment when he said, "Who wrestles in a jacket?" And it had me Google image searching to see if there was ever a time, maybe early on, when Wade actually kept his entrance jacket on during a match or something, and he was actually trying to be self-deprecating. But as for the match, a monster going over a no-entrance-designated jobber made me think of what NXT used to be like, so I liked that. And as for the storyline, more from the Nooklings and McAfee's leftovers sounds great, especially if it gets us to a Ciampa versus Dunn singles match on a significant one that's announced ahead of time and advertised as the main event of whatever week it'll be on. But it is silly. I've mentioned it before, but it really has gotten kind of silly how Pete Dunn's only storyline against anyone is, "I'm bad, and you think you're bad? Let's find out who's badder." So I'm tiring of that.
Yeah, it's good that he's getting a little more time to talk, but I don't know. I'm kind of hoping now he's done a lot of turns, but I'm kind of hoping that Ridge usurps this group and Pete finds his footing as a badass babyface again. But I don't know. Sense. Yeah, I just don't know how you it worked so well when he was with Matt Riddle because of the really strange group, the strange pairing. I don't know if you have to find that again or if it'll just work, but hopefully they haven't frittered all of that away. Okay, so let's go to our crossover match, Cameron Grimes and LA Knight versus Grizzled Young Veterans. We've been talking about it for a while. They haven't been putting this stuff in the main event spot because it's not main event stuff yet, and they can't put it in the opener because it's a lot more angle than like long form match. But these guys keep getting entrusted with the crossover spot, like week after week. And this was only a 4:45 affair. Cameron Grimes and LA Knight versus Grizzled Young Veterans. Now, before the match, we had a scene in the locker room. And even though Grimes has done all this stuff for Knight with good humor, he's become more and more annoyed by some of the things that LA Knight is having to do, because Knight keeps raising stakes and have him do more demeaning things, has him shine his shoe here and whatnot. And then they get into the match, and well, in the scene, it's basically an I don't trust you off, because they're both trying to distrust the other. But in the end, of course, it is Knight who is less trustworthy, because Grimes fights his way to a tag as he's being dominated by the tag team specialism of Grizzled Young Veterans. And he tries to make the tag. LA Knight drops to the floor, won't make the tag. Grimes fights him off for a while because he's awesome, but he does get hit with Ticket to Mayhem. Heels go over in 4:45 on a night where there was 49:20 in wrestling. My note for after the match says LA Knight is a dick. So there you go. That's it in a nutshell. Ted DiBiase makes the save. Well, not the save, but he just kind of helps Cameron Grimes to his feet. Basically tells him he's naive. Like, I told him he was going to leave you in the lurch or whatever it was. And he helps him to the back. So, not sure when. I mean, it's not like the past where you could drag this out for a year or two. But they've gotten some mileage out of this. And now we just, I guess we have to see where this blows up, because this too could be takeover worthy. We recently have had takeovers where we were like, are any of these matches takeover worthy based on the build? And now we've got perhaps too many. Tom?
Yeah, this is going to be the strongest takeover card in quite a while. They got close to being a little too cute with this, I think, because it really was looking like Grimes was going to win here. I thought, then again, anytime he does that head scissors takedown of his, and this time he did it just as beautifully as ever on both members of GYV simultaneously, that'll put the stars in my eyes. But it's just another situation where I can't really argue with the segment. It's well performed, and that's really the most I can say about this particular little chapter in the ongoing Knight versus Grimes situation. This was not a major week for them, I didn't think.
Nate?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I don't think it was a major week for them either. The match itself it was fun. And I thought Cameron Grimes actually looked pretty good after he was left hanging. He actually got some offense in against both members of Grizzled Young Vets before getting taken out, which I thought was kind of cool. It was just nice to see him get a little bit of offense in rather than just getting completely squashed and looking like a complete and total loser, which, I mean, I guess could have worked too, but I don't know. I popped for him him knocking both of them down at least a couple times before he got flattened. But yeah, I think overall this, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of development here tonight other than, obviously Ted DiBiase coming out, which I thought was a nice touch. I just thought It was a little weird. You know, it's not like he had a mic or anything like that. So it was a little bit hard to understand him because he wasn't mic'd, you know? So, yeah, I don't know if necessarily everybody would have heard what he said. I guess I did. So probably people did, but, you know, just like you guys said, it's just him, you know, don't be naive and whatever. Which I, you know, I think worked cool and kind of maybe hopefully plants that seed in Cameron Grimes' head, like, hey, I'm being taken advantage of big time. I'm not just being a man of my word. Like, this is some BS. Hopefully that's kind of where it goes, and we go back into a feud between the two of them. I have a feeling that's where it's going to go. Go back into a feud between the two of them and see them, you know, maybe potentially wrestle for the $1 million championship again. I think that makes the most sense. You know, like, it seems like Ted DiBiase wanted him to be that champion and carry on that legacy, not necessarily have it go to LA Knight. So that's what makes the most sense to me anyway. It's still some of the stuff I look forward to every week. But tonight it was just kind of another segment. It wasn't really anything that it was good. Let me, you know, I gave it a hit and hits and misses, but it wasn't their best shining moment for the act.
Trey Baxter versus Joe Gacy. This is a round one match for the breakout tournament. The breakout tournament has had a lot of fun, some good power wrestling, some good chain wrestling, and some good big versus little. What it did not have was a lot of surprise. Today we got that. Trey Baxter goes over Joe Gacy in 5-10 in a match that you definitely would have thought that Gacy was going to go over to set up the face-heel Hoss fight with Gacy, a very clear heel. Against Odyssey Jones. Instead, they will be doing Trey Baxter versus Odyssey Jones in a face-face big versus little match, assuming that they are going to continue to run with Odyssey as a face, which I think they are committed to doing. I loved this match. This went 5-10. Trey Baxter goes over Joe Gacy. Gacy dominated the match with a lot of power stuff. Trey Baxter, who I knew as Blake Christian on New Japan Strong, basically I knew him as a bump machine. That is primarily what I saw him doing. He would take a lot of the bumps for his teams. He'd be in a lot of six-man, eight-man tags and did not figure into the pin as often, but was in there and could take a lot of bumps. And wouldn't you know it, that's what he did all damn night tonight. Before finding a way and beating Joe Gacy, who basically early in the match had set him up as being essentially unbeatable as far as Trey Baxter is concerned. But Trey gets this win. And because this was such a good big little, I'm really looking forward to the big little with Trey and Odyssey Jones and seeing how they handle that, because it is surprising, but if there's no surprise in a tournament, then why do it at all? So yeah, good stuff. Gacy, I think, will be fine. We did get an email from Ginny Edelstone. Joe Gacy, birth surname Ruby, notorious murderer, ring name Gacy, notorious serial killer, trained by John Dahmer, notorious serial killer, only in wrestling. I'm a longtime NXT fan, watched since the beginning, enjoy your podcast. Go VIP, Ginny. Now, thank you for the email. Also, could this email be a first? Ginny, short for Virginia? I don't want to linger too long on it, folks, but I think it's a first. Nate?
It certainly seems like it, but hey, we won't linger too long. That sounds, Joe Gacy and Trey Baxter. It was that, man, I think this may have been my match of the night. It was short, but it was explosive. I really like the way Gacy looks here. And it was super dominant. I do. I really dug it. I haven't seen with most of the guys in the Brego tournament, like I really haven't seen a whole heck of a lot of their stuff. So, this is probably the second time I've seen Joe Gacy. I want to say I've seen him on one other show, like some independent show. Not seen it, but like I was just watching a recording of it or something. I feel like I have, but don't quote me on that. Still, regardless, I really liked what I saw out of him tonight, and I was definitely not expecting Trey Baxter to go over here. It just really seemed like Gacy was going to get a dominant win. Plus the bracket, you know, like you just said, is now going to put a face versus face. It just kind of didn't seem like that would be the way they were going to go. But surprise, Trey Baxter won. I'm okay with it. I mean, I certainly liked what he had, you know, what he has to offer here. But I it was not like if I put money on it, I would have lost. I did not see that coming at all. Yeah, but I'm still looking forward to it. I think the match to Odyssey Jones should be cool. I think you're right. He is pretty committed to they're committed to keeping him face, and I think they should. I mean, he's incredible. I think he's going to be somebody to watch over the next couple few years here. But yeah, definitely looking forward to that. Can't really say a whole heck of a lot more about the match. Like I said, I liked it. Looking forward to it. Surprised Gacy lost. And we'll see. We'll see if Baxter can overcome Odyssey Jones the same way.
Tom.
Awesome to hear from Ginny. This also all happened on a show that featured a match with someone with the last name Fish. So, yeah, only in wrestling, I guess. Or only in, I don't know, an insane asylum or something. But, yeah, the result of this match
back
was
to One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
There you go. That's where it would have fit. Oh, boy, we found it. Okay, well, the result of the match was indeed surprising, mostly because Baxter does not inspire me at all, but neither does Gacy. So even though Baxter has even less going on as far as, you know, what I've seen so far, not that they can't change my mind going forward. Yeah, even though Baxter has less going on, it's just, you know, Gacy doesn't really inspire me either. So that's fine. I wasn't really I'm into this tournament, but this final match of the first round wasn't really of interest to me. So whatever there. I will just say that going back through the Wikipedias, as we so often do, if you want to count the first War Games takeover that they did, Gargano nor Ciampa were on the main card, but of course that was where Gargano wrestled Pete Dunne on the pre-show, so he was there. You would have to go back to NXT TakeOver The End when they returned to the Full Sail Arena, the Full Sail Studio rather, to do one more takeover there, or, you know, what they thought was going to be the last takeover that they would ever do in that room. Neither Gargano nor Ciampa were on that, nor any other takeover prior to it. So that was June 8th, 2016.
Oh, okay.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. Okay. Well, there was one other match on this show. Trey Baxter, one win, one singles win on NXT in his career. Know who's got even less? Bobby Fish
Bobby.
Versus Roderick Strong. A big money match, folks.
Big money match at 8:40 p.m.
Oh, yeah. How many NXT wins between them? Probably about, around 35 or 40. 35 or 40 for Roddy and 0 for Bobby Fish. So there you go. 12:41. This was 10 seconds shorter than your main event tonight. Roddy beats Bobby Fish with his finisher, which I don't know what this finisher is called. I knew the stronghold. I don't know this one. There was distraction because why wouldn't there be? Because there are three guys out there with Roddy. But Roddy goes over. Why not more of the other guys in the ring? We'll get them. They're getting Roddy as championship to have the diamond mine look good and carry around something. There's plenty of time to get rust into this. But we did get an email about that. All the same, salutations, gents. This is from Kevin Catani. I hope this email finds you well. While I am deserving of last week's ridicule, I promise I sent an email to the wrong email address, silly wife's phone. I thought this was an entertaining episode and we got a little bit of everything. I continue to love the evolution of the Grimes Knight storyline. Ridge Holland is back, although I wish he had come back as a face. Oh, he'll be a face eventually. Don't worry. And the breakout tournament is shaking up nicely. I'm still thinking it will be Jones and Hayes in the finals. I got to disagree with you there and go Jones, Vink. What's his name? Hudson. That's
although it. Last week you did say that you felt they gave away that Hayes was going to go over Vink in the semifinals.
Yeah, you know,
that was a week ago, though. You've had a week to sleep on it. I'm sure you've done nothing but think about that one bracket.
That is most of what I've done.
nothing but think about Vink.
I'm just doing the Forbes thing where I predict everything. So later on I can say, see, we called this. Well, you called everything. That said, what do you guys think about the progress of the diamond mine? Why are we not getting more rust? We know what Strong can do. Why not give some shine to the other members? Secondly, is Joe the guy to take the title from Cross? And what does he do from there? If so, he faces Pete Dunne. And then Walter. Thanks as always, and go VIP. Office hours are now over. The Professor, Kevin P. Catani, PhD. I continue to think it will be Joe, but a combination of too obvious plus Tom getting into my brain, I am not completely certain. I think that that is where it's going to change next, because Joe will be fine either way. He doesn't need the championship necessarily unless they think he needs to legitimize the brand for a bit. So he can lose it, have Cross lose it to somebody else, although who? Almost everybody's a heel. And then you got Joe to face these guys, because Joe's got his next couple of feuds lined up. Well, his next feud lined up with Pete Dunne, we think, anyway. So doesn't matter. As for what they're doing with Diamond Mine, I'm fine with it. And with Russ Taylor, Tyler Rust, if you're going to give him all the championships at once, which you are, you got to do it slow. You got to take it slow. So we will get there, but that hasn't happened yet. Roderick Strong defeats the winless Bobby Fish in 1241, Tom.
Yeah, so of course I agree with you on everything you're saying about Joe, and spoilers for what I'll say about that later. I don't think anything they did tonight made me budge any, you know, this way or that way on it. Just forcing myself to be optimistic about the Diamond Mine, I feel like I say it every week. I'm just trying to tell myself this is ultimately a Tyler Rust vehicle. We just have to get there, and they're not, you know, the pedal is not down to the metal. They're taking their time. And as for this particular match, I think the issue for me was that no matter what Malcolm Bivens said to hype it up, it just didn't feel like anything was at stake here. So it wasn't until later in the show, much later in the show, when they did the little Kushida video where Kushida said, okay, yeah, I saw your match with Bobby Fish, and you beat him, and that was really impressive. So I will put my title on the line against you. You can't get my name out of your mouth, so let's do it. That was when it retroactively made this feel significant. But leading up to that point, the match just it was anything but big money.
In NXT 8 years back, they accidentally would have put this this video, this Kushida video, before that match. So he gave away what was happening before the match. We have seen that lately. Tom and I do NXT 8 years back, a VIP show talking about NXT 8 years to the day. You know, production, at one point it was in its infancy. So there you go. Nate.
Oh, just wonderful. I guess, you know what, I will restrain myself. I should leave that as a tease. Go VIP if you want to know what we're talking about. It's oh boy.
Yeah. Oh boy indeed. Nate,
oh
on
boy.
Fish Strong.
Fish and Strong. Man, do I have to this was I'll again, I guess, give you spoilers for the hits and misses. The only hit or the only miss of the night. Yes, big money match as they hyped it up to be last week, and as Tom aptly point out earlier, big money match at 8:40, which was literally the first thing I said in the hits and misses. It's like, what an oddly timed place for such a big money match. You'd think they would have opened with it or closed with it or at least put it on, you know, 9 o'clock. Right then and there, just the booking of it kind of takes you out of the whole big money thing, no matter how much the announcers are hyping it up. Maybe it could slip by, you know, a casual fan, not us, right? The whole thing, I had trouble getting into it. I really did. It did not seem like there was anything at stake at all. Why are these two even in a feud other than the fact that they were, you know, in the Undisputed Era and they're the other two guys that aren't feuding right now? So put them together. They never really explained that. And they just kind of went, okay, we don't like you, Bobby Fish. And Bobby Fish like, okay, I don't like you, Diamond Mind. And that was that. It was for something that they were trying to build up to be this quote big money match. I don't really think they succeeded at it. The match itself wasn't bad. Bobby Fish, Roderick Strong, they're okay. They're going to go out and they give you a halfway decent match, but for what? This didn't seem like it really did anything for Roderick Strong. It didn't really seem like it did anything for Bobby Fish for me. I couldn't get into it. I was just waiting for it to get over. I don't like saying that because I respect both the guys, but I just really was not into this. Roderick Strong as kind of the de facto face of Diamond Mind right now is just by the week, it's really not working. It's working less and less for me as the weeks go on. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Last week, with that line that I pointed out, there's the last thing he said in his promo last week. I forget exactly what it was. It was like, I'm coming for you, Bob, or whatever. It was just delivered really bad. He doesn't come off as that de facto leader. And again, maybe it's because this is going to be that Tyler Rust vehicle. Which I'm hoping that's what it is. I'm going to be completely honest with you. I don't think they have super long-term plans for Diamond Mine. Granted, this is just speculation and stuff that I've been reading, but from everything I've been reading, this was supposed to be a way to bolster the cruiserweight division and get Strong to Kushida. And now we're here and it's kind of like, okay, they're here. I'm excited for the match, mostly because I get to see Kushida wrestle. But where does it necessarily go from there? I don't know if there's that long-term plan there. We'll see, but I'm a little skeptical. I don't know if there's really a, like Undisputed Era, there was always a long-term plan. For a lot of these factions, there seems to be at least a relatively long-term plan. I don't know if there is a Diamond Mine. Quite frankly, I don't know if there should be. It doesn't seem like this faction is working. I think they really need to do something different, drastically different soon, or this whole faction is really going to just kind of fizzle and die, and nobody's really going to be able to take anybody seriously. And I really don't want to see that happen to Russ.
I actually think I think they're fine where they are right now. I don't think that there's room to move this faction up any higher at the moment. We can argue about the presentation and who's on top for now, but if their aim is to, in the short term, take Strong to legitimize the group by having a belt to carry around while they're working towards everything else, that's fine. My only question is, why bring on Malcolm Bivens and then have him do as little talking as he has? Because when he does, he's obviously continually knocking it out of the park. Every time. So they, my wife watched tonight.
Sorry, I was going to say, I'm wondering if it's almost kind of like an old school thing, like putting them together with them and kind of he's coaching them behind the scenes, just kind of trying to get them up to not his level, but at least a level above where they're at. Lisa fought.
Yeah, and she watched tonight and saw when they replayed that the part of the sit-down last week with Bivens and Strong, and Bivens talks first, and she hadn't seen him. She was like, oh. And then they go to Strong, and he says what he says, and she goes, and she, you know, she watches enough, but Strong doesn't get a lot of mic time, so she doesn't really know his mic time. She goes, oh, so that's why they gave him that guy to talk for him. It's like, yeah, my wife, as casual as it gets, like, just was immediately going like, oh, okay, got it. What are you going to do? Zoe Stark and Io Shirai.
Yeah, baby.
Eat at a Japanese restaurant. Cultures, folks, different cultures. Io orders something in Japanese to the Japanese server. Zoe just says, that sounds good. I'll have that. So, of course, it's octopus. She sneaks a lot of bites of octopus onto the floor. By the way, there are like six cameras watching, many angles capturing all of the things going on in this scene. So why the girls are so nonchalant is beyond me. But whatever. Zoe can't eat. She cannot stomach the octopus. She throws a bunch of it against a wall. Apparently nobody notices, even though there's a full restaurant of people. This starts with Zoe saying that they've got to form a bond. Instead, she sees Shirai kind of form a bond with the server because they speak the same language. Subtext, people, subtext. They speak the same language. So so she takes that away. Out there, lying, and it sounds so stupid. And it is. But for me, they got away with this. And seeing these two women who live in a very kind of no-nonsense world in their characters in general, this was genuine character development. I dug this, and I hope I don't hate myself down the road for saying that. Tom?
Yeah, last week I said that I wanted the little conversation that Stark and Shirai had to result in Jeremy Borash following them around to cute little things that they did together and following what shenanigans ensued. And I did not expect at all that that is exactly what we were going to get. And I liked this a lot. I'm not sure about Stark being presented as so much of a dunce to the point that she doesn't even know what wasabi is, even though, you know, the first time you ever see wasabi and you don't want to know what it is, it kind of looks like ice cream. So that was probably the most believable part of any of that. And to be fair, Io did order about half of the menu, so there was a lot to pick from. But yeah, I very much enjoyed, or I continue to enjoy them playing off one another. I very much enjoyed, as I expected I would when I was fantasizing that this could be a thing, the way that they played off one another in this scenario. And it doesn't seem like we're just going to get, it seems like we're going to get more of this. And it doesn't seem like we're going to get more of it in just like a, well, here's the exact same thing, but now they're at a shooting range or something. I don't know. I feel like Nate suggested shooting range last week, and that's why that's on my mind. But, you know, just something silly. It feels like because of that, well, it's because we speak the same language. And then Zoe kind of being introspective about that, it feels like she is then going to take the next skit in a – it's going to develop even further. Like maybe she'll take that statement too literally and have to – do something embarrassing, or she will do something embarrassing, and Io will maybe get what she's going for, but just sort of shake her head. And then eventually they'll come together, and it will be so, so charming.
And Nate?
So I got to say, I did really dig this these segments. They were kind of stupid. They were funny, but they worked. The weird buddy thing it's overdone in wrestling, especially in NXT lately. But heck, we still got Ciampa and Thatcher kicking around, right? I think this worked. I really don't have a whole heck of a lot to add to what you guys have said either. But you know, I guess really the one thing that I will point out is they should probably defend the titles before somebody realizes that they haven't defended them in 30 days and they get stripped.
And before guys like me forget that they, in fact, are the champions, because I was thinking, like, are they doing this because they're working towards a championship? No, they're doing this because they are the champions. Okay, so we had Karrion Kross choked out by Samoa Joe. We had a Samoa Joe retrospective. That was kind of cool, seeing his first run in NXT and his championships there and the stuff he did back then. We had Frankie Monet indeed slumming it, as Tom so aptly put it, with Robert Stone and Jesse Kamea calling them losers. Well, she's the one running with them, so what are you going to do? And saying that it's all going to be her. It's got to be her who runs things, and they got to rebuild this thing from the ground up. Okay, what's that mean? Because if that's just Mandy Rose, that doesn't get you out of the losers problem. JB emailed us. Hi, team. It's JB from Detroit. I apologize for the long email, but I just wanted to comment on the discussion from last week about NXT needing to do a better job preparing its wrestlers for what Vince would want to promote on Raw or SmackDown. While I understand where Tom is coming from, I have to respectfully disagree. I think it's debatable whether or not NXT's job at this point is to even prepare its wrestlers for the main roster. Maybe one could make that argument when it was a pre-taped one-hour niche show on the WWE Network, but now it's a nationally televised show that gets hundreds of thousands of viewers per week that USA pays right fees for. They should worry more about retaining their core audience at that very least more than anything else. Adding to that, I don't think that Triple H should concede his booking vision to Vince's vision at this point in their careers. I think that most critical fans would agree that they enjoy NXT much more than Raw or SmackDown. I am of the opinion that if you swapped NXT booking with Raw and or SmackDown at this point, with the built-in viewing audience of the two big shows, the audience would actually grow. If Triple H started booking and training his wrestlers to fit Vince's system, I'd argue that they still honestly wouldn't get over to any great extent because Vince's vision is flawed to begin with, and in turn, the NXT product would suffer anecdotally. I would stop watching. Triple H is a smart enough guy to know that Vince won't be running the ship forever, and I think that he is biding his time until he gets to implement his vision across the entire company. In the meantime, he will just produce the best product that he can. It sucks for the former NXT wrestlers that were ruined or released from Raw or SmackDown before Triple H takes over, but I think he's hedging his bet that he can rehabilitate his guys when the time comes while establishing his guys on NXT in the right now. Yeah. I mean, most of this is not new ground for this show or for any of the Wade Keller podcasts or anything. We've talked about this stuff. And, of course, Vince's vision being so flawed today and him thinking, I've got the biggest company, therefore what I'm doing is right, seems to be odd because he seems to have been resting on his laurels for some time. And I feel the exact same way, JB. I think that so many Raw and SmackDown fans are so built in that they cannot see how bad the thing is that they're watching, and they won't go away. But we seem to have said before, there's a level of built in audience that won't walk away. But I was part of that once. I was part of the never, ever, ever will walk away from the weekly show ever. And I did. And I didn't do it like because my life got busy. I did it because it sucked. It was overly polished and yet it's an oxymoron. It seemed so polished and slick and overproduced and yet it was
a
story,
but it's
yeah,
still a turd.
Yes, and it was a story that was undertold. It just felt like I was tuning in every week to watch a new Transformers movie, and I was like, you know, Transformers were cool. I know they used to be, and now they're not. That's how it kind of felt. I don't know. It would be easy to get off the rails here because this is all big picture stuff. But I mean, yeah, Triple H, I don't want Triple H to concede his booking vision to Vince's vision, but I don't think he's got an option there. I think if Vince wants to implement his vision in NXT, that's what'll happen. And I think probably some of that is what happened during the Wednesday Night Wars. And when I would be on these media calls with Triple H, I wouldn't say talking in code exactly, but I think you always could feel that there were things he didn't agree with, directions he didn't agree with, and he only had so much ability to actually say that aloud without threatening his own level of power in his job, if that makes sense. I don't even know where else to attack the email. But yes, it would be nice if this was a proving ground, or if it was, I don't know. It was funny to hear that internally they still think of this as a developmental system, because it's been so good creatively for most of NXT's life cycle. It's been better than both main roster shows creatively. So for it to be the proving ground for a show that's far more bankrupt creatively most of the time is funny to me. Like, why? I don't know. I think that right now, there's never been a better time. At a time when they've recently released Bray Wyatt, their most creative homegrown character, I think there's no limit to the questions you can ask about WWE right now and where they're headed and what's going on. Tom?
Regardless of the booking and the creative on Vince's shows, I would simply argue that doing a developmental level show that focuses on talent that Vince actually is want to use, and doing a developmental level show that is exciting and has rewarding booking and intriguing creative, that those are not mutually exclusive concepts. So that would just be my little argument there. I guess I already said what I had to say about Joe and Cross. They didn't really budge me one way or the other with what they did tonight, but it's fine that they acknowledged it beyond the video packages tonight, with Cross going out and standing on the announce desk to shout and Joe coming out to do what he did. I think it's going to enter my nightmares to think about what it must be like to walk around and always have the grimace of Cal Bloom right over your shoulder. Like, you go to brush your teeth and look up in the mirror and go, "Ugh." But Joe will have to deal with that for a while. But Joe's intensity is what's selling this, and selling it to the point where it is a match I am genuinely looking forward to. And again, one that I don't know how to call. I am not totally sold on this being a walk-off for Joe, so it is very intriguing there. And as for Frankie Monet, on one hand, I appreciate that they framed this as an interview, even though as soon as Mackenzie Mitchell was done with her question, she may as well have exited the scene, because it was just a conversation between the wrestlers, or the a wrestler, an adjacent wrestler, and a former wrestler, as it were. But on the other hand, I'm like, okay, but we've also got the several camera setup for, you know, the Borash skit with Stark and Shirai. So why was this an interview? So that is a question, but they did what they did, and it just has me going yet again. Every single time Monet shares the screen with Robert Stone, her stock plummets. And this is, you know, she's very promising. She's got years and years of proving why she's promising, and they stuck her with this guy. And last week I was thinking, this doesn't seem like it's going to be a long-term thing. And I want to still think that this week, but the storyline seems like she might try to reform the Robert Stone brand from within, with Robert Stone still hanging around. And boy, have they got a lot of chiseling away on that thing to do if they want to make it anything other than absolute bottom barrel.
Yeah, it's a manager who's never had a success is probably the least useful thing on your entire roster. It's just dragging. It's doing the opposite of what a manager needs to do. And they like him, which I think he could bring something. But because he has lost everything to this point, I don't know what that thing is anymore. Nate?
Yeah, I don't necessarily know either. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of – actually, I'm not going to spend any time on that stuff. I'm going to go back to the email real quick because this is something that I've been thinking for the past few weeks. Actually, I've been thinking about this for a while, but it's kind of something that just with a lot of the cuts and things that they've been doing over the past few weeks, it kind of started to come back in my head. I'm really wondering if – and this is something that comes up every once in a while, but I'm wondering if they're starting to think about selling. You know, so from what I'm hearing, Vince has given, you know, Nick Khan more power than he's given anybody else other than himself before, which is, you know, that's saying something other than the fact that maybe Vince was slowing down a little bit. But then Nick Khan's going in, he's obsessed with not being in the red. He wants every department to be making money. So he's making all these cuts. And that makes sense, right? You know, if you've got a lot of redundancies in your company from a business standpoint, that makes sense. Cut out the redundancies and streamline your business. 100% makes sense. But when all of a sudden you start making these big cuts like Braun Strowman, Bray Wyatt, Samoa Joe, you let somebody like Daniel Bryan slip away, CM Punk slip away. You don't try to, you know, re-sign him or work with him if you know that he has a – Yeah, because I'm sure somebody in WWE knew that you know, he was maybe thinking about coming back, unless AEW threw this, you know, crazy amount of money at him and was like, okay, fine, I'll come back. But the fact they were able to let, you know, them get away, there's just all these little tiny things that are really starting to make me think that they don't care about what they're necessarily putting out as a product right now because they know they're going to be making money. So as long as they keep pumping out shows, people are going to watch them. They're going to keep making money. They just posted record profits. They're going to keep posting record profits, you know, mostly due to the Saudi Arabia deals and the TV deals and things like that. So it's almost like they're trying to make the company look on paper as basically have the most wealth. I'm not a business guy, but it's almost like they're trying to make on paper look that this company is worth as much as it possibly can to then sell it and, you know, for as much as they possibly can. I don't know. Kind of just something I've been thinking about. I think it might even be worth talking about because of all these weird things going on. And it is something that they've, you know, Vince has said, you know, I don't know if it was Vince or somebody said in the past that, like, you know, if somebody made an offer, they wouldn't necessarily turn it down, that they'd at least consider it, entertain it. A lot of these things that they're doing have you scratching your head. And the only thing that when you put everything together, the only thing that even makes sense to me is they're trying to cost as much as possible, cut down all these redundancies as much as possible. So then they can sell the company and, you know, to somebody else and it's no longer in McMahon's hands. I don't know.
Yeah, people have been talking about the possibility of them selling for a while, and I've always just kind of shrugged my shoulders. But the way it's been going, it's you got to at least consider it. It's just been such a weird time. So anyway, that's our show. Next week we have Ember Moon versus Saray. Yeah, that'll be something.
Oh boy.
I mean, it'll be more women's matches than we got this week because in a very rare turn, we got zero. We will also get Ilya Dragunov making his debut on NXT US TV. This is a guy who probably they should have introduced some time ago to really, really drum up interest in this match because it's going to be awesome. But yeah, they're doing it now. So that's it. That was August 3rd, 2021. NXT, I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or spookymilk.games, Tom.
At Tom Stoup on Twitter. And for August, whatever it's going to be, 2013, you can go VIP and listen to NXT 8 years back with me and Kelly talking about a show that isn't going to have Bray Wyatt on it anymore. Whatever are we going to do? And Brian Alston's movie question that he has sent us this week is about favorite movie couples throughout, and he really narrowed it down here, the entire existence of cinema. So we'll have some fun talking about that after we talk about the episode of NXT from exactly 8 years back to the day.
Turner and Hooch, folks.
Hooch is crazy, man.
Oh, boy, there we go. We got it in.
Yep, had to do it.
Nate.
All right, at Nate Lindberg on Twitter, I do the hits and misses for NXT, which I actually already posted up as we were talking and blabbing and flapping our gums throughout the course of the show. It's already up on pwtorch.com for you guys to check out. So, yeah, do that. And then if you guys like dogs, if you want, check us out over at Deegetime, Deegetame. We're about to start an RPG where we all play anthropomorphic dogs, and we go out and try to find our masters because they've been kidnapped. It's actually a really fun and cool and weird and silly, crazy story. So check it out if you like dogs.
Man, I'm really starting to think Hooch is crazy.
Hooch is crazy.
There you go, folks. I don't like dogs. Yep. There's a heel turn at the end of the show.
You know,
cheers.
Kelly.
I know. We'll see.
Unbelievable.
Maybe.
And for Corbin, woof, woof.
All right.